leader of the opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've listened carefully, and now it's my turn to make my contribution. Mr. Speaker, the moment has arrived when the opposition will be putting its final blueprint on a budget debate in this House before the next general election. Mr. Speaker, the next budget debate in that House will determine whether the economic growth over the last 3 years, whether the $1 billion budget has created an impact on the livelihoods of St. Lucians. Mr. Speaker, it was widely expected that 9 years ago, when the St. Lucia Labour Party government took over the management of this country, that according to the plan of action for the development of St. Lucia, we would see one, a significant improvement in the modernization of the agricultural industry, which would redound to the increase in banana production and a well-organized, diversified agricultural industry. But that did not happen, Mr. Speaker. It was also expected for employment to increase. It was expected that through this government social re-engineering program, which they highlighted in their manifesto, that crime would reduce. And that generally, Mr. Speaker, all St. Lucians were expected to be financially better off. But instead, Mr. Speaker, we witness and heard St. Lucians who are economically depressed. Economically depressed, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the question is this. After all this suffering, after staying so long without being employed, after all this crime and killing in our society, would you expect that the 2006-2007 billion-dollar budget revenue and expenditure allocations to turn these factors around? It is now, Mr. Speaker, for us to understand that economic and social prosperity only comes with proper fiscal planning. Today, Mr. Speaker, I take this opportunity to give a synopsis on what has caused the economic and social degradation of our economy, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, when this government got into power, the expectations were high. People expected so much, Mr. Speaker, because you know why, Mr. Speaker? They promised, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, today, Mr. Speaker, what has happened to our economy? What has happened to our people of this country? They are crying. They are suffering, Mr. Speaker. And I will tell you, the sector which took the major blow, because they boasted about that, they got into power on the premises that production would increase, Mr. Speaker. The farmers came out campaigning, Mr. Speaker, for them. Today, they have neglected these very same farmers. Mr. Speaker, are you aware that our economy was primarily based on agriculture tourism and manufacturing. What has happened to the agricultural industry? It was always the plan of the former government to allow the agricultural industry to be the sector that would spread economic activity across St. Lucia. The primary industry was the one which created a proper distribution of wealth across the country, Mr. Speaker. Because you know, Mr. Speaker, when you're designing your economy, what you do not want, you do not want the economic activities to be concentrated in the towns and the urban areas alone. And then you have further problems. So the banana industry, Mr. Speaker, was used as the sector to spread the wealth. And it was done properly. Because you have bananas being planted in all the rural areas in St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, if this government plan was to transform the economy from a banana-based economy to a tourism and service economy, the first thing it had to take into consideration were those farmers who were going to be displaced. And the second thing is to find out what would they do to earn a living. These were the things they had to take into consideration, Mr. Speaker. What has happened, Mr. Speaker? We have had, and the speakers before me alluded to that, Mr. Speaker, we have had a banana industry that if we refer, Mr. Speaker, to the Economic and Social Review of 2005 on page 24, which reveals the following. In 1996, we produced over 125 tons of bananas, Mr. Speaker. We derived a revenue of over $100 million. And you know, as I told you before, Mr. Speaker, the revenue was spread across the country. And that is the problem. It's not deriving the revenue. It's how the revenue is distributed, Mr. Speaker. Today, the banana industry only received in the year 2000 a revenue of $45 million. In the year 2001, Mr. Speaker, 39,000 tons were produced, realizing a revenue of $25 million. Significant drop, Mr. Speaker, from 1996. With all things okay, Mr. Speaker, no hurricanes, no droughts, no snowstorms, no tsunamis in St. Lucia. You know that the production fell from 125 tons in 1996 to 30,000 tons this year. Mr. Speaker, you know, that was where the postmortem had to be carried out, Mr. Speaker. They waste time and effort and money carrying out the postmortem, Mr. Speaker, on the market steps. After a tsunami passed in Central Castle, did you expect somebody to drown, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, that was where they were supposed to carry out the postmortem. Because the postmortem, Mr. Speaker, would reveal that labor killed bananas. If you carry out a proper analysis, it will reveal that St. Lucia has lost over $1 billion, Mr. Speaker. Over $1 billion in revenue from the decline in the banana industry over the last 10 years. This is why things are so hard today. This is why things are so tough today. Because if you were to add interest to this money lost over a 10-year period, this would reveal the level of poverty in this country today. Mr. Speaker, can this continue? Can this trend continue, Mr. Speaker? This cannot continue. The government must realize that they have made an error, Mr. Speaker, by allowing the total privatization of the banana industry, which resulted in too many small companies doing the same thing and thus creating this economy of scale. I've said that before, Mr. Speaker. But the government, you know, the government, Mr. Speaker, they are not listening. They are not listening, Mr. Speaker. And so they won't correct the problem. The problem won't be corrected by them. Mr. Speaker, we must quickly return to one banana management entity in this country. I've said it, I will say it again, and I will continue to say it, Mr. Speaker. You know, it is very hard for the government to understand it. But there are times you can make errors, Mr. Speaker, and because of your people, because of the status of your economy, Mr. Speaker, you could change that. Mr. Speaker, we must encourage and develop a proper scheme for inputs for farmers. I heard recently that the farmers now got a break, Mr. Speaker, and the fertilizer is now being subsidized. And I support the initiative. I support the initiative because there's always an argument. And I think the government has always been arguing that. There's always an argument that governments are not supposed to subsidize agriculture. The USA subsidizes this agriculture because, you know, we need the food to feed. We need to feed ourselves, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I support the initiative. Most of all, Mr. Speaker, we must continue to look for new opportunities and markets for our farmers, and we must continue to diversify our agriculture economy. We must continue, because, Mr. Speaker, you know, while we stay there and we wonder what can we do to provide employment for the young persons living in school, what can we do, Mr. Speaker, to assist in all the social problems so that we could get the idle minds off the road? I've always insisted that agriculture is the way to go. And while you wait for the foreign investors to inject their finances in the development of this country, Mr. Speaker, you could plan your agriculture economy. You could diversify your agriculture, Mr. Speaker. And I will get to that in a while. Mr. Speaker, diversification of our agriculture industry must continue. It must be better organized and planned. And I want to take a look, Mr. Speaker, at the other crops and agricultural activities that can take place in solution that we could encourage. We can grow, Mr. Speaker, tomatoes. And you know there's always the talk about tomatoes. While it's been growing solution, we can grow carrots, cucumbers, pumpkins, potatoes. You know, Mr. Speaker, we're only talking about working in a hotel. I must say that employment in the tourism industry must increase. But we must look at alternative methods of employing our young people, Mr. Speaker. And we could do that by diversifying, by getting those young persons involved in the growing of these other crops. But how do you do that, Mr. Speaker? How do you do that, Mr. Speaker? Right in St. Lucia, there is a market, Mr. Speaker, for these crops. There is a market from the local consumers, and you have the hotel. Now, what you have, Mr. Speaker, the hotels importing a lot of the vegetables, Mr. Speaker. 90% of the vegetables used at the hotels, Mr. consumed at the hotels, are imported. I heard the Prime Minister talk about putting in place a program to assist the farmers through the Chamber of Agriculture. And so, Mr. Speaker, I urge that the government take a practical look, Mr. Speaker, as to the means of how they can assist in financing those young, in financing the development to diversify the agricultural industry. Mr. Speaker, livestock is another area. You know, every day we have so much talk about importing eggs, importing chicken, pork, beef. Every day, we have all these things, Mr. Speaker. Lamb, mutton, rabbit, fish. Every day, our importation bill is going higher. We have the land space, Mr. Speaker. Why don't we encourage the development? Why don't we encourage the development of these areas? You know, it is not just about saying that we want to reduce our import bill, Mr. Speaker. It is about putting plans in place. Putting plans in place, putting mechanisms in place, Mr. Speaker. And you know how we can do that? Through our young people. And you know, when you get these young people occupied, when you get them off the street, you know what will happen, Mr. Speaker? We are sure for the crime rate to reduce, Mr. Speaker. We are certainly sure, because idle minds, Mr. Speaker, idle minds are the worst thing to entrust on somebody. And so, Mr. Speaker, I also urge, Mr. Speaker, that the government, through the marketing board, Mr. Speaker, organizes a marketing trust. Because you see what's happening, and I've been saying that over and over. We decided to inject millions of dollars into the marketing board. I supported it. I also explained that we must understand the difference between marketing, Mr. Speaker, and sales and distribution. And I urge around that time that we define the role of the marketing board. I explain that if we are going to have the marketing board engaged in marketing of our products, then so be it. Allow them to do it, Mr. Speaker. And if we are going to develop another entity that would see about the sales and distribution, then we do that, Mr. Speaker. But what we have right now, you must separate the distinct responsibilities. And you must separate them. And I explained that the last time, Mr. But what you have now, you have an institution which is expected to see about the marketing of our products. They are now engaged in sales and distribution. I wouldn't even call that, you don't call that conflict of interest. You do not call that conflict of interest, Mr. Speaker. The focus is wrong. We must now allow the marketing board to focus on marketing of our products, Mr. Speaker. For example, there's a market available right here in St. Lucia for the products. And I just mentioned it a while ago. The hotels. Who are the ones sitting down, discussing, planning with the hotels, together with the Ministry of Agriculture, so that we can meet the quality standards that the hotels require? Who are the ones doing it, Mr. Speaker? I urge that the marketing board, Mr. Speaker, be given that role, and then a new entity, Mr. Speaker, to see about the sales and distribution, to assist those young persons, Mr. Speaker, which we would like to get off the streets. So, what we have is a situation whereby unemployment and social problems continue to plague our country. It continues to plague our country. And so, even though we had an economic growth of 5.4% this year and 3% last year, and 4% last year, Mr. Speaker, the question is this. What effect does the economic growth of this country have on the local man, especially in the rural area, the farmers? This is the question we have to answer. And so today, Mr. Speaker, while We talk about employment increasing. I intend in this budget to address and give Parliament a comprehensive and practical analysis of the unemployment problems in this country. Not one where you just say employment has increased by 30%. I will go through the constituencies, Mr. Speaker. In Denry South, Mr. Speaker, the village of Denry South, and I'm starting there, Mr. Speaker. And I told you the economy was built on manufacturing. Belfaston employed about 500 to 600 persons from the Denry North and Denry South constituencies, including Kwale and Miko. Today, Belfaston is closed. Erat Gladier, farming community, there were over 500 farmers going to that community to farm on a daily basis, Mr. Speaker. These farmers have been displaced. I'm talking about real unemployment. I'm giving you the figures, Mr. Speaker, real unemployment. Denry North Valley, you know, there was an industry, a company by the name of Fampo. It employed 300 persons. When this government took power, Mr. Speaker, took over the management of this country, Fampo closed. Mr. Speaker, Denry North again. We have Tenerife, Gallet, Gonrivia, Orléans, La Paul, La Ressource. All these farmers lost their jobs, Mr. Speaker. Displacement, 2,000 persons. Real unemployment. That is not joke. Miku North and Miku South, farmers displaced. Over 1,000. Swadel had two, Saltibis. A farming community. The entire Swadel, Mr. Speaker, over 500 farmers. And you know, the member from Babylon a while ago talked about the employment in his constituency. But I must inform him that for us to focus the power, all those communities were farming communities. Hundreds of farmers were displaced. Bedford, Forestier, Millet, Badeny. I'll come to the end result. Over 1,500 farmers were displaced. And you know, Mr. Speaker, I'm not talking about one area. I'm talking about Swazelle, which starts in the south. Babano in the north. Beaufort, Bellevue, Bus. Grace, displaced farmers and factories closed in that same constituency. Hundreds of persons lost their jobs. Soufre, Fosseja, Delce, Celticus, banana farmers displaced. Over 2,000. And you know, that is the reality. That is the reality, Mr. Speaker.
Please allow the leader of the opposition to make his contribution.
That is the reality. You know, Mr. Speaker, where are those persons? Where are those persons, Mr. Speaker? What economic activity are those persons involving? With over 10,000 persons losing their jobs from the banana industry. What is happening to their families and their children? Over 25,000 persons in these communities were directly or indirectly affected. These were persons who had sustainable economic benefits or employment from the agricultural industry. Listen to that. You know quite well, Minister of Health, member of Denry South, that the farmers at IRA were displaced. You know that hundreds of them were displaced. And you cannot pretend the Minister of Agriculture, member for January South, because Bell Fashion closed. And you know the reason why Bell Fashion closed. You know the reason why Bell Fashion closed. Because when this government got into power, the first thing they said they were going to do was to close down all the factories that were not paying their rent under the Joint Fashion Act. Bell Fashion around that time, all in this is $60,000, and they locked the door on them. That's what happened. Do not pretend, because you know what happened. One morning, when the workers came to work, they locked the door. You know that too. The door was locked for $60,000 rent. Didn't you know? Because you left there. You left there and you went to New York to beg them to come back. But that's not how people do business. You know that. You know that. You went and begged Bell Fashion to come back to St. Lucia because it was an error. Error never to be forgotten. That's not how you treat investors, especially when you're talking about foreign investors who are injecting finances into your economy, not taking away. No? No? It's not liking foreigners. It's the type of investment. Because if you allow foreigners to come in and invest so that the goods could be exported, they're welcome. Because the goods are manufactured in St. Lucia because of the technical experts and so on, the capital. No! The Honorable Richard Frederick is not against foreigners. He's according to the type of investment. Because if you allow foreigners, if government decides to spend $100 million in the construction of roads, that is local revenue. And if you allow foreign contractors to get all the contracts in this country, what do you expect? That you have taken away your local revenue. You have exported your local revenue. That's what you have done. So it is a type of investment. But Bell Fashion was the right investment for government to handle. The right type of foreign investment for government to handle. Because what they were doing, they were importing raw materials. Therefore, you derive revenue from customs. When they import the raw materials, they then employ over 500 to 600 St. Lucians to develop the product. And then again, they export the product. So you know, while you derive revenue from customs, you then suffer the cost. All of them are happy with that type of investment. But you know, this government did not have the vision to understand the type of foreign investment which was needed, Mr. Speaker, to keep this economy moving. So we're not against foreigners. We would like the foreigners to come in and build a hotel. Of course. We would like them to come in and develop the manufacturing industry. Mr. Speaker, the wages in the hotel and construction industry are so low that it makes no economic sense to travel very far to work. Because you see, the reason why I'm getting to that point, Mr. Speaker, there is always the argument that because of the increased economic activity in tourism, then things are happening. Yes, things are happening. We would like to see increased activity in the tourism industry. We want the tourism industry to grow. We'll be happy that the tourism industry could employ everybody in St. Lucia. I would welcome that, Mr. Speaker. But what is happening? Why you say that the tourism industry is growing and it has catered for additional revenue? The distribution. How can those persons living in the rural areas travel to work in the north for $30 to $40 a day? Okay. That is the question. How can they do that? How can they do it? So therefore, Mr. Speaker, the persons in the rural areas will still continue to face problems of unemployment. Because the other thing, Mr. Speaker, on the other hand, if they decide to migrate to the towns and urban areas, then you know what happened, Mr. Speaker? You create an additional problem. Because what you would have, and you wouldn't like that to happen, this thing happened in Jamaica, it happened in a number of industrialized world. What would happen is that those persons would move away from the rural areas, they would go to the south, and then you're going to solve a problem. It happened, Mr. Speaker, it happened in the 1970s when the United Workers Party was in power. And I'm sure the first of this government would be to spread the economic activity across the nation. So you hit two birds with one stone. And so, Mr. Speaker, you know what this tells us? It tells us that the programs implemented by this government are not economically viable and therefore does not serve as a catalyst to stimulate sustainable economic activity. The Honourable Member, who was the Ireland scholar, he was one former head of me, Mr. Speaker. I did economics accounting and maths at Ireland College. I've been saying that. The Honourable Marius Wilson and I, when we were at college, we went to A-level together, Mr. Speaker. He got the Ireland scholar. So, Mr. Speaker, I am not here. I've said over and over, it is about the business of the country. And the business of the country is paramount. You know, Mr. Speaker, I listen very attentively, and that's how I've developed myself, Mr. Speaker, over the years. I listen to the other side, I listen to the point, to the point and the various issues. And Mr. Speaker, because of what has happened, Mr. Speaker, because of the programs not being economically viable, this has resulted in a high debt burden of $1.6 billion on this country. $1.6 billion on this country. And you know, Mr. Speaker, they say measure them on their performance. But it is the performance of the economy. It is you measure the government and how the people feel. You know, Mr. Speaker, the question is, how can we solve our unemployment and poverty problems in St. Lucia? That is the big question. And the next government will be faced with the same question. But before I can outline to you what government needs to do to alleviate the unemployment and poverty problem in this country, I must inform you that this budget and the budgets before only further indebted our country to the extent that today, Mr. Speaker, I said it a while ago, today, the national debt is $1.6 billion. This year, Mr. Speaker, you know, there are two things. One is the planning, Mr. Speaker. You must plan. Because if you decide you're going to you move to a $1 billion budget. The next thing is, how are you going to spend the money? How are you going to spend the money? How are you going to spend the money? I will tell you how you reach there. I will tell you how you reach to the $1 billion budget. I'm coming to that. You have to plan how you're going to spend the money. And if, Mr. Speaker, the monies are spent in the right areas, Mr. Speaker, if after the monies are spent, that sustainable economic activity, sustainable employment is derived, then you have done the right thing. But if after planning, Mr. Speaker, you realize that you have further problems, more crime, more unemployment, Mr. Speaker, then you know something is wrong. Mr. Speaker, this year, 2006-2007, we've learned expected to be estimated at 335,767,000 dollars for the financing of the 2006-2007 fiscal year budget, and due to the slow rate at which our $1.6 million debt is being paid, and Mr. Speaker, also due to the interest applied to this debt, it is expected by the end of this fiscal period that the national debt will be estimated at about $2 billion. $2 billion. No, Mr. Speaker. I explained, you were not listening. You need to listen, member of the result. I spoke about the interest. I spoke about the loans. You know, I explained it, Mr. Speaker, he's not listening. He needs to listen a little more. Because if he was listening and understanding, Mr. Speaker, then fashion would not be closed today. And the power is error, Mr. Speaker, would be continuing on the daily economic activity. You know, and now, Mr. Speaker, I hear you want to run away from the result. But you're welcome to the result. You are welcome to Denry Law, because the farmers of this country, they are waiting, and they would like, Mr. Speaker, they would say, no, you are welcome, I'm not afraid, I want you to come. No, Mr. Speaker, I will not stray away. So, Mr. Speaker, with the debt moving to, at the end of this fiscal period, moving closely to $2 billion, government must now revisit and review the high percentage at which loans continue to be a means of financing the budget. Listen to that again. Mr. Prime Minister, listen to that. You have to listen, because if the country is ours, and we all must be concerned. Government must now revisit and review the high percentage at which loans continue to be a means of financing the budget. Presently, no, I'm just repeating it for the Prime Minister to hear. Presently, loans is expected to contribute 40% towards the budget, towards the financing of this year's budget. Mr. Speaker, that trend started some time ago. The trend started some time ago, Mr. Speaker. And I realized in the estimates 2004-2005 that 26% of money to finance the budget, Mr. Speaker, the fiscal year activities by the government, 26% of this money came from loans. In the year, Mr. Speaker, it's going up, Mr. Speaker, an upward trend. In the year 2005, 2006, 27 to 28%. Its loan stand at $257,892,000, Mr. Speaker. Can this continue? Mr. Speaker, these are the problems that the government is faced with today. That's the problem they face with today when trying to stimulate the economy. These are the problems. The debt too high. Too many loans to repay. The debt is too high, Mr. Speaker. Too many loans to pay. Because when you have 40% of your budget being financed by loans, there are problems. It means that the years before, your economic policies were not sound. From 97 upwards, Mr. Speaker, your economic policies were not sound. It didn't serve, your policies did not serve, I said that before, as a catalyst to create employment, to the honorable member talk about being a reserve. For sure you know there is no reserve. To create employment and to stimulate the other sectors, that did not happen. I won. This government in the last budget. I won this government in the last budget. You know, Mr. Speaker, every time you know, in this house, Mr. Speaker, and that is the problem of the government. Every time you are trying, you see, I am not those, I do not want to get there, Mr. Speaker, but if you force me, I can get it quick. I am not those that are going to say I have a doctrine and I do not have a doctrine. I am, anyway, Mr. Speaker, that is not
my kind of don't be ashamed of me.
No, that is not my type of politics, and I'll move on, Mr. Speaker. We have a suffering in the economy. I will come to that. If you want me to go there, I can go there. Okay. I won this government in the last budget that the short-term employment program and the total privatization of the banana industry, which allows so many small companies to emerge, has served as an indictment on this government. These were not sound, sustainable policies. Instead, it had a diverse negative effect on the entire economy. Mr. Speaker, that is what happened, Mr. Speaker. And so, Mr. Speaker, I could take some time out to boast about my qualifications. I did that the last time, you were not listening. When I got fired, I did that. You were not listening. I will not go back to that, Mr. Speaker. I am the leader of the opposition, Mr. Speaker. I will not go back there, Mr. Speaker. I command the respect to explain, Mr. Speaker, to make my presentation non-personal, to make the affairs of this country paramount. I said that before. I'm non-personal, Mr. Speaker. And I will continue on that line. That is why I'm here today, Mr. Speaker. I have been tested before. So many things were said about me, Mr. Speaker. And I never responded, Mr. Speaker. Because I knew, Mr. Speaker, I knew that there were problems facing this economy. And I knew that the people had elected me, Mr. Speaker, on the premise that I would move away from the dirty politics, the politics of the gutters, and see about the economic and social well-being. That is why I'm here today. And I will not flinch. I will not make a mistake, Mr. Speaker. I have said it. No one. Debates after debates in this house. There's not one. I will come to that. Yes, I will respond. I hope when I respond, everybody will put their qualifications on the table. Everybody will put their qualifications on the table. And I don't want to get into that. You're forcing me to get into it. I have it. Okay. I would suggest the following to quickly ease the economic problems we are faced with, especially in the rural agricultural areas. And Mr. Speaker, you must listen to the way the presentation, Mr. Speaker, is designed. I come in this house, I criticize, and at the very same time, I try to assist in giving ideas. Most times I can tell you my ideas are right, Mr. Speaker, but they don't follow them. They are not a thinking government. Mr. Speaker, I said it before and I'm saying it again. We must quickly invest in the rural areas to stimulate economic activities where farmers lost their jobs through the banana industry. We must do that, Mr. Speaker, by encouraging the cultivation of other crops and other forms of agriculture, like poultry, eggs, fish, cattle, to cater for the local market and hotels. You see, Mr. Speaker, this is not a joke. This is serious time. And we all see on the TV every day what is happening to the young people. They are all involved. Don't talk about globally. We had a sustainable economy where people worked across St. Lucia. People didn't have time. The young people were not idling. They got involved in economic activities in agriculture. Why didn't you continue and modernize the industry? Why? And you know, that is the problem today in this country.
The honorable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, by modernizing the agricultural industry, you know what would happen? We'll be able to process, can, bottle, and package our local products. That's what we'll be able to do. Modernize our agricultural industry. We'll be able to can, package. And so when we speak about the CSME, we would be ready. And if these things were done, it would allow for sustainable employment and economic activity, especially in the rural areas. Sustainable employment, I underline here, Mr. Speaker, sustainable employment. Because it is nice to say that through your short-term employment program that you employ 2,000 or 3,000 persons. I don't have a problem with that. Initially, no, because you see, the reason why I'm saying I do not have a problem with that, because initially the explanation was that those displaced families needed a cushion, they needed an ease so that they could get themselves into some other activity. And the Prime Minister used the term cushion because they were displaced by your policies. That's why they needed the ease. So the Labour government decided to bring in short-term employment. But Mr. Speaker, from an economic point of view, how long can you allow the short-term employment program to continue before you say, or before you put in place other forms of employment that are sustainable? How long can you allow it? Because you see, the short-term employment program, what it does, Mr. Speaker, it is non-productive. Government is just occupied in spending and spending and spending and spending. And that is why I spoke about processing. Because if you have moved into a more modernized method of agriculture, you could have moved into processing. So our products, mangoes, tomatoes, carrots, whatever the government decides to, or people would decide to plant, you would process. That would be sustainable employment. Because one, it would employ the young persons on the farm. The other young persons who went to Sir Apple Week and so on would be engaged in the marketing and so on. In the processing plant, you would have people working there, Mr. Speaker. And so it would have a positive effect on our economy. So that is why I've always been saying that the short-term programs, employment programs which the government implemented, have gone for too long. And it has gone for too long because the economic policies are not right for continuous sustainable development. And that is the problem. So while the Prime Minister keep on saying that he's pounding so much money into the agricultural industry, pounding so much money into the economy, and spending money in delivering up in short-term employment programs all over this country, what is happening, Mr. Speaker, is that since it was meant to be as a cushion, whereby it gives the government the ample time and opportunity to develop other sectors of Mississippi or other industries that could create sustainable employment. That never happened. And today, what you have is a government continually taking loans and loans and loans to maintain this sort of thing. That is what's happening. Because even though the loans are meant for financing capital projects, even though the loans are meant for financing capital projects, if for example, the economic plans were sustainable, the economic plans put forward by this government were sustainable, what you would have? You would have an ease on your recurrent revenue, Mr. Speaker, surpluses. You would have excess money so that you could inject into your capital and other financing, Mr. Speaker. So that is the problem of this government today. So they are faced with a very, 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 very big task. They are faced with a very, very, very big task. Because the loan amount in proportion to the total budget financing continue to go up. 3 years ago it was at 25%, it moved to 27-28%, Mr. Speaker. Now loan financing on the budget list, for the budget, Mr. Speaker, is 30%. Don't you see there's a problem? Don't you see there's a problem? So, the book about the $1 billion budget, you could see that in 2004-2005, the budget was $768 million, $564 million. That was the budget. Loan financing was 180 million. But Mr. Speaker, in 2005-2006, it went up to 954,145,000 dollars, Mr. Speaker. A significant amount of financing. The new budget from 2004-2005 to 2005-2006 came from loan. So when you boast about your budget moving up, that I told you that I would one day, the St. Lucia Labour Party government would have a $1 billion budget for this country, we must find out how, what are the factors causing this budget to go up to $1 billion. That is the important thing. In 2005-2006, Mr. Speaker, listen to that. Loans were at $257,892,000. This year, loans moved to $335,767,000. Mr. Speaker, so therefore, you could see the shift, almost $100 million in excess went into loans for 2005-2006. You see the reason why we moved to the $1 billion budget? Because of loans. There were other factors, Mr. Speaker, I must say. Because of loans. Mr. Speaker, I've always spoke about a ceiling. Because that is what that guides your economic policies. While you believe you can spend and spend and spend and do a lot of things, you must also know the size of your population, that the total income that would be derived from whatever economic activities in the country, you must also know all these things. And even with the ECCB, they are usually benchmarked to guide government on certain things as to your finances. And so I proclaim for this government and governments to come, Mr. Speaker, that we only allow for the highest 20% of the revenue to finance our budget to come from loans. One-fifth, Mr. Speaker. We should not go higher than one-fifth of the revenue we need to finance our local budget, Mr. Speaker, government budget, to come from loans. I proclaim 20%. And so throughout the year, Mr. Speaker, as we return to Parliament, I will move the resolution.
The Honourable Member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Speaker, I rise to invoke standing order for the use of order 10 to allow the Honourable Member from Denry North 30 minutes. Although, Mr. Speaker, I want to indicate that I'm in a generous mood. I prepare to allow a full hour, but 30 minutes is what is requested.
Honourable Members, the question is that the Honourable Member for Denry North be allowed 45 minutes, more or less, 30 minutes. That is subject to Standing Order 32, sub Order 10 being suspended. And now for the question, as many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member, leave is granted.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm not here, and I've said it before and I will say it again, I'm here to take a look, Mr. Speaker, at what is happening in St. Lucia, the economic policies, the social policies, and to even advise. And I said, I will move a resolution in this House so that we could allow only 20% for the highest. I think it should go, when I carry out the analysis, I worked it out, Mr. Speaker, looking at the developing world and some other areas. When I plug in the formula on my computer, I realized 17% was okay as compared to those other areas. But Mr. Speaker, I say 20%. 30%, Mr. Speaker, of loans to finance our budget is much too high. So, Mr. Speaker, I will take a short look at the tourism industry because, you know, it is the industry we harness. It is the industry we place the emphasis of economic prosperity, and I want it to continue to. Mr. Speaker, the tourism industry is one that must continue to grow. It must continue to grow. While the tourism industry might not create the proper distribution of wealth which we would like it to do, it plays a significant role in the overall development of our country. Of course, and the emphasis of developing the tourism industry is a good one. I always support it. But governments must be careful in the way they allow the industry to grow. You know, and I don't like to shift a lot, Mr. Speaker, but That was the same warning for the banana industry, which I gave a couple of years ago. They could have corrected it. If the privatization was wrong, if it allowed this economies of scale, all you had to do, Mr. Speaker, was think of a new way to do it. And I'm saying the same thing with the tourist industry. And I'm telling you something that has been happening, and we need to correct it very quickly. We cannot allow the development of the tourist industry to compromise our free usage of the beach. That is very important. You know, when you talk about the free usage of the beach, everybody say, well, no, Sapabwe, Usadias Ali Bela, Sapabwe. No, we know what is happening. We cannot allow the workers who work in the hotel industry to be victimized to the extent that certain hotels do not want their staff to be unionized. Because, you know, we need to be great leaders. We need to be great leaders. And great leaders evolve. Great leaders evolve, you know, Mr. Speaker, as union leaders. And why should we allow, if we say that is going to be the industry for the future, that is going to be the sector that is going to bring economic prosperity to this country? And if we know that the only protection that our employees have, which is non-governmental, Mr. Speaker, are the unions, why allow hotels? Why allow hotels to deprive their staff, their workers, from being unionized? Why? And if the laws are there, if the laws are there, Mr. Speaker, we have to enforce them. Because it is happening. And so, Mr. Speaker, it calls for a firm commitment, a plan of action to be put in place by government in consultation with the people of this country to decide on what. No, you must consult. I know it is very hard for government to consult. In the past, the former government, it was very hard for it to consult with the people. But if we talk about transparency, accountability, we must not forget, you must not forget the premise on which the people entrusted you. You must not forget the premise on which the people of St. Lucia voted for you in power. You remember the 61? It was on the premise of transparency and accountability. Do not run away from it. Today, the very same government, you know, Mr. Speaker, I wish I was the Prime Minister because I'd be so open to the media. You know, we must not allow that to happen, Mr. Speaker. Our fear usage of the beach, Mr. Speaker, labor laws, human rights issues, Mr. Speaker. These are the things we must watch with the development of the tourist industry. We must do it from now. It is not, it's a matter of listening. It's not a matter of rebutting. It's a matter of listening, understanding. Because if the problem is not there, you put it down in your books from what I have said, and you put it aside. But if you believe that the problem exists, and if you believe that the problem can emerge, then from now, you must safeguard. It is not only safeguarding the people. It is also safeguarding the industry. Because you do not want the same errors that were made in the banana industry to happen in the tourism industry. That's what you don't want. Because you're going to have a disaster fiasco. That is what I'm saying. We cannot continue. Again, Mr. Speaker, that is another sensitive issue. And I think we must look at Barbados. Although they started bad, but they learned very quickly from that. And let me read first. We cannot continue to allow one single hotel owner. No. We cannot continue, Mr. Speaker. I didn't make the document of a house, of the house. But I'm quoting from an article in Barbados this weekend. We cannot continue to allow one single hotel owner to buy or occupy miles of beachfront space. We cannot allow that. Mr. Speaker, you know why I make the reference? When I look at the development taking place in Fordo, I'm afraid, Mr. Speaker, we know in this country there are hotels that occupy an entire beachfront. I told you I am afraid for the development that is taking place. Apparently, while I welcome the development, while I would like the development, Mr. Speaker, because with the closure of Belfashion and with the state of the banana industry, I would welcome the development of the hotel Aquale. But what I am saying, in your whole policy, in your whole trust, in the whole product of the tourism industry, of the tourism development, we must be careful. Because what could happen at the end of the day? Some other investor might decide, look, that is an ample place, a right place for me to develop, but the beachfront would be gone because it would be sold. So if we allow this to happen, Mr. Speaker, and I'm watching the development at Kwale, I welcome it. If we allow this to happen, this would be short-term and non-futuristic development. And so I call on government to quickly put a policy to guide the way in which these things are happening. Mr. Speaker, No, that's not true. I told you what I did already. I'll tell WM something in a while. Mr. Speaker, I spoke about it before again. Our tax system when it comes to cruise ship and so on, I believe we must do it in harmony together with the rest of the Caribbean. I've been saying that over and over. I know there are some problems that arise when we try to do things collectively in the Caribbean. But we always speak about the CSMA. And if we speak about the CSMA, we have to come to certain common terms. The CSMA, you know, Mr. Speaker, that is what I'm saying. There are certain decisions we can take collectively as a one Caribbean that would benefit all of us. That would protect us, Mr. Speaker, from certain investors who just want to take the advantage on us. Because sometimes you want to increase your tax, and then they decide otherwise, and the boats do not come to our harbors again. But if we do it collectively in the Caribbean, Mr. Speaker, we will be stronger. That is basic. And so I always question the CSMA. Because if there are problems there, Mr. Speaker, there are problems, that is where we must come together. You know, the Prime Minister always talks about the CSMA. I talk about it too. But you know, these are the areas we need to strengthen ourselves within CARICOM. But instead, Mr. Speaker, you know, I remember when I look at the decision taken by the members of CARICOM, you know, I remember, you know, the little history I did. I remember Pastor Mante. I remember the great Marcus Garvey. Do you believe, Mr. Speaker, this great men from the Caribbean, manly, these guys are in the grave, turning, Mr. Speaker. They are there wondering what is happening to our leaders. And I've always told the leader from St. Lucia to rise to the challenge, to protect the unfortunate in the Caribbean when he's on the regional scene. Instead, Mr. Speaker, you know what the government decided on, Mr. Speaker, in CARICOM? You know what they decided on? Discriminate against labor? How can you discriminate against your own people? You know, I have to say that in this budget because I would like the leader of this country who represents St. Lucia on the regional scene to send a clear signal. We need some more leaders like Marcus Garvey in the Caribbean. You discriminating against labor? You are now putting in a policy. We know the problem in the Caribbean is a problem with the unfortunate, the poor. And you're putting in your main initiative, your main goal with the CSMA is to allow, one of your main goals is to allow the free movement of skilled labor. No, I explain that over and over. The free movement is supposed to be the free movement of labor. Not the free movement of skilled labor. A few years ago, we were slaves. That's why we need our great leaders to come back, and that is why I stand there today. That is why I stand there today. No, what you needed, and I'm saying it again, what you needed free movement of labor, close case.
All labor,
free. No, but Mr. Prime Minister, you must understand it. What I said was that you have to put in a formula in place. Because you have solution is of a certain size. Solution has a certain amount of persons living, the population of solution. Guyana is of a certain size. Population. Listen, what you have to do, what because of the size of solution, you know that the size of solution, we could only allow 20 persons or 25 persons to come in. So you put in that formula and you say for the next 5 to 10 years, you have to be a great leader, and that is the problem in the Caribbean today. We know for the next 5 years, only 20% from CARICOM can come into solution. You do not discriminate against labor. Free movement of labor. Forget about that. You're not understanding, and you're not a great leader, and you have problems in understanding what I'm saying. That is what's happening. Free movement of labor across the Caribbean, but because it happened already in a number of places, because of your economic status, because of your population, and because of your size. For example, you can allow 30,000 to go into Jamaica. You say, okay, that is the ceiling, 30,000. You say 200 to solution because of our size and population. You say 150 solution size, population, economic status. Guyana, you know, the economic status will also have a factor to play because of its size, although you might want to send a lot of persons there because whatever you... That was the formula they had to derive. So what you are doing in that case? Boy, it's very hard with these leaders. So therefore, you would not be discriminating. You would not be discriminating against our Caribbean brothers. You know, because you are a farmer in Lucia, you cannot move to Trinidad to work on the farm. That is not right. That is not right. That was not the fingerprint. Our great leaders came from the labor union, and we had to fight for the deprived and the unfortunate. And Mr. Speaker, I am serious about it, Mr. Speaker. I am very serious about it, and I think the Prime Minister from St. Lucia should take the leading role to inform CARICOM that we cannot do this thing. A few years ago we were slaves. The problem about slavery was labor, discrimination against labor, victimizing, all kinds of things. It was against labor. Today, for us to implement that very same sort of thing, Mr. Speaker, that is an indictment on the leaders of the Caribbean. And I am not part and parcel of it. No, Mr. Speaker, I am the leader of the opposition and I will debate on the ailments, what I perceive to be right. This is not about that. No, it's not about that. It's really about, and if you notice, my debate always stays within a certain perimeter. I don't call out about money. I don't call people thief. I do not do this. There is no record. That is not my style. I do not believe, as honorable members, that is the way we must approach the debate. We must stick to the economic and social policies And I mean it, Mr. Speaker. I'm trying to set a precedent in St. Lucia. I've been working hard on it, but it's very difficult, Mr. Speaker, with the politicians in St. Lucia today. Very, very, very difficult. So, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, construction. Well, construction. Mr. Speaker, what in this country has catered for the shortfall in the banana revenue? That is what I want to know, Mr. Speaker. What in this country has catered for the shortfall in the banana revenue? Has manufacturing done it? Has the service industry done it? Has construction done it, Mr. Speaker? While we see a significant increase, you know, sometimes when you debate on that line, the government side always tell you, no, you're not supposed to debate on that line. But it is a vital point. While we see a significant increase in construction activity in 2005, and as depicted in the graph, page 30, Mr. Speaker, of our economic and social review, page 30. We saw a significant increase in the development of, well, the public sector construction, Mr. Speaker. You saw a significant increase in road construction. Construction, Mr. Speaker, now the growth rate in construction increased, and it also affected our GDP. Mr. Speaker, the problem I'm having is, while I harness, or while, Mr. Speaker, I would like to see the construction industry continue to boom. In areas, listen to me carefully, in areas where you have government expenditure, government financing into the construction industry, in areas where you have government expenditure, government financing into the construction industry, especially in the area of roads, I believe we must be careful as to the companies and the persons the contracts have been awarded to. I know there's always a big question mark, persons talking about certain criteria, the CDB criteria, XYZ and so on. But we must be careful, because while construction expenditure grew in the development of roads, most of the contractors, Mr. Speaker, with the big contracts in St. Lucia, are foreigners. No, I said it again. It is the area the foreigners invest in this country. It is the area they take part in what area they take part in the economic activity of this country. Because financing of the roads is done by government. And therefore, it is always perceived that government financing really and truly comes from local revenue. Or if it does not come from local revenue, local taxes would have to repay for these loans. So if you're spending $150 million in the construction of these big roads, why is there not one company from St. Lucia getting a contract over $20 and $30 million? You know, I am saying that not in malice. No, I am saying that not in malice, not to be malicious, Mr. Speaker. I am saying that because fundamentally, what has happened, I'll tell you what has happened. Before, Mr. Speaker, we had a situation where we had the Cold War, and we had the whole situation with the capitalist, the open system, the America, and we had in the Soviet Union, which engaged in the communist system. Today, I believe, with the disappearance of that type of thing, what the government must do, because you see, before, governments in the Caribbean had to battle between two superpowers, whether they had to go west or whether they had to go east, whether they had to embrace the communist and socialist idea, or whether they had to go the capitalist way. No, I'm explaining that to you. So that was what they were faced with. But I believe, Mr. Speaker, as young leaders coming from the Cold War era, we do not have these things on our backs today. So we must design our system in a way that it must be mixed. Socialist, the areas where government, there'll be a lot of waste. You allow it to go capitalist, privatized, and so on. The areas where you believe, like for example, Mr. Speaker, as a leader in St. Lucia today, I would not privatize the water, WASCO, the water industry. I would not do it. I would not do it, Mr. Speaker. I would leave it as a national entity. And that is where you bring in a little bit of socialism. But what this government has embarked on is a lot of capitalist ideology. Capitalist ideology. And I trust when you look at the persons around the table, especially the Prime Minister and the Honorable, the Deputy Leader, I thought they would take that direction for the development of this country. That was why the people voted this. So then all the elements are going. Now, I do not like to spread rumors, but the Minister of Education would have to respond and answer to that. I am hearing that the preschools are going to be privatized. There were letters sent out. I saw one from a school. Education. I understood, Mr. Speaker, that they are going to privatize this institution. I said, no, that will never happen. You will not privatize this institution. These are the places where the small ones go. You must change your perception, your thinking, your understanding, the way you intend to design this economy. So, Mr. Speaker, I came to the ideology of this government, which is very important. Our government thinks, the policy of a government. And so 90% of the state contracts in St. Lucia are awarded to foreigners. Why should you allow a situation like that to occur? Why should you allow that? You know, I could recall there were local contractors as soon as this government got into power. Where is BNB today? It's not here. Disappear. And this, you know, I heard the government talk about trying to bring in a bill. I think it will come sometime tonight on the wages. Increase the wages, the minimum wage. It's a good bill. Because these foreign companies pay low wages, Mr. Speaker. Very low wages. And how can we tolerate that? That was not the reason why the people voted. The people voted for the St. Lucia Labour Party to expect these areas to improve, for them to be sensitive as to the economic activities, the things the to allow to go into private hands. You know, when you're allowing Wasco to go into private hands, we know water is so essential. So essential. Today in the valleys, Mr. Speaker, we receive brown, dirty water in the pipes. Where is the conscience of this government? Don't we remember the people who voted for us? Don't we have a conscience?
Honourable Member, your time is very short.
Let me run. Yeah, I can.
Speaker, I beg to invoke Standing Order 32, sub order 10, to allow the member from Denver North a further 30 minutes. Well, take good. Because we want to enjoy yourself. So we'll allow your full 30 minutes, but if you take 15, fine.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 32, sub order 10, be suspended to allow the honourable member an additional 30 minutes, plus or minus, to make his contribution. I now put the question, as many are of that opinion say aye, as many are of a contrary opinion say no. I think the ayes have it, the ayes have it. Honourable member, leave is granted.
Mr. Speaker, so the Denry North Basin is not out of all the problems being faced in this country. And you know, as a result of the decline in the banana industry, there are lots of problems. And to make it worse, we have a serious water problem in the Denry North Basin. A serious water problem. I have said over and over, the privatizing the water industry will not change things. It will not change things. This is not the way to do it. We must have and put a program in place. It must be from a governmental standpoint, not from a private standpoint. In Garrett, in my constituency, we have a serious water problem. Very serious. Months. The people do not receive water in the pipes. And when they receive the water, Mr. Speaker, the water is dirty. Oleo has the same problem too, because they built a tank at Oleo, which was good. But at the same time, because of the lack of the distribution of water, there's a serious problem with water at Oleo. Despin has the same water. And these are different parts of the constituency I'm talking about, you know. It's not the same area. The people of Despin hardly receive water, Mr. Speaker, in their taps. Montpanash and Rivière is another problem again. The people do not receive water in the tap. What is happening? Belmont, the same problem. Austin Hill. La Pelbrie Richmond. So, Mr. Speaker, I spoke to the Prime Minister about it. I wrote the Prime Minister about it. I spoke to the Minister of Health. I wrote the Minister of Health about the problem. I wrote to you about the problem at Denner Rivière. Oh, shucks. I'll make the letter a public document, and I'll pass it over to you. I'll even pass it over to the media. I made it a public document. And he promised that he would build a dam at Thomas. That is the right place, because you know, when you hear me complain about water, you'll believe that there are no water sources in the valley. There's the water, there are rivers flowing like the sea. on Sundays, they usually have a river bash up on it. I did that too, Mr. Speaker, when there's no water in the tap. I bathe in the river too, because that's what this government has done. It has sent all the people of the valley to the river. And Minister of Health, you know, when the people go to the rivers, what happens? Bilharzia and all kinds of diseases could be derived. So, Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't want to be malicious, but what I am saying, the privatization of that institution, there will be, you're talking about social assets, the privatization of WASCO will not solve the problem, Mr. Speaker. The Valley is a constituency, Mr. Speaker, with a lot of energetic young persons. You know, a lot of energetic young persons, although, Mr. Speaker, we receive dirty water. So, Mr. Speaker, I suggest that a dam, be built upon it. No, you don't listen. It must happen. And I've said it before, we must put filters. We must put filters and we must have treatment plants to treat the water. You know, everything is a joke for this government. Everything is a joke. Mr. Speaker, these are real issues affecting the lives of the people of the valley and the people of St. Lucia. These are real issues. I'm not just making it up. I am telling you what is happening. You know, there's always a quest to talk about the past. So, Mr. Speaker, I know it won't happen. I wish it could happen because it doesn't matter under which government it happens. All I want to see is the development of the valley. In sports, Mr. Speaker, the Grand Rivers playing field needs urgent attention. That playing field is very close to the road. And the national footballers come there and train. A number of other constituencies come to that playing field to train. Then it's toilet facilities. Then it's shelter. And I would have... That's, you know, they really need these things that can repair. Then it's lights on the field. Because, you know, Mr. Speaker, after a game, after a match, what you have is no light on the field. It's very dark. So then they need some light on the field. I'm not talking about light in the field to play football at night or play sports at night. So, Mr. Speaker, that is important because if we talk, if I always say that if you decide or your policy was to build a stadium, the next thing you must take into consideration is upgrading the other playing fields in the other communities. No, you're telling me it's in the budget and it has been years that field has been neglected, the Grand Rivers playing field. It's years. That field has been neglected. Mr. Speaker, I'm still at Grand Rivers again. You know, I recall having a series of meetings. No, these are not lies. I'm telling you the truth. I recall having a series of meetings with the members from the Ministry of Social Transformation. We initially decided, together with the Ministry of Social Transformation and the BMTS, that we would build a preschool or daycare center at Grand Rivers. Mr. Speaker, I put in place, I worked together with the community at Grand Rivers to put in place a development committee. We put in place a development committee. The ministry and BMTS, they came to Grand Rivers. We had a series of meetings. And that is why I know, Mr. Speaker, that our young children, the education of the 2 and 3 year olds are going to be in problems. Because these things were said there of the privatization of the school for the young ones. And you know, Mr. Speaker, that we decided that we were going to build a free school. We did everything. They promised that they were going to build a free school. And the free school was never built, Mr. Speaker. It is either free school or daycare center, I can't recall. But it was never built. You know, Mr. Speaker, that is not fair. The Development Committee in Gun Repair Tendering, they are hard-working persons. A human resource center was also promised years ago and was never built. Never built, Mr. Speaker. And so, the people of Gun Repair, the children are all over the place. Today they go somewhere, the landlord decides they have to use the place and they're moving all over the community. Is that fair for a 5,000, a place which has 5,000 persons living? Mr. Speaker, on the Gun Repair and roads, the Montparnasse Road has been earmarked for a while to be built. The Gun Repair Montparnasse Road has been earmarked for a while to be built. The road was supposed to be built by CCI, a company named CCI. But again, a foreign company. But what I do not understand, Mr. Speaker, if CCI, which is a foreign company, does not have the time, they hand the title, they just got the contract to build a road from Patrick to Broadway Lake. They also have the contract building the road to the stadium in the north. If they hand the title, why shouldn't we allow a local contractor to build a small road? Why shouldn't we allow that? Why should we give contracts like this again to foreign contractors? That is my problem, Mr. Speaker. You know, the little monies we have in St. Lucia, all are living. Everything is going. Our banana industry is declining. And you know, we have serious unemployment problems. Our debt is increasing, Mr. Speaker. We are borrowing, Mr. Speaker. Our loans are increasing to finance our fiscal financial year, Mr. Speaker. And you know, all road contracts have been awarded to foreigners. So, Mr. Speaker, I would urge that road was supposed to come to be completed in February of this year. Listen to that. The road was supposed to be completed in February of this year. The Montparnasse Gun Repair Road. And because the contract was awarded to CCI, a foreign company which paid the workers of this country low wages, because, Mr. Speaker, their hands were tied up to so many contracts up to now, because you know World Cup is coming and they have to see about the Brazil area. I wish we had a World Cup match in Denver enough. Things would change. You know? Because of that, Mr. Speaker, up to now, a road which was supposed to be completed at the end of February has not yet started. Mr. Speaker, that is not right. I would urge that the Ministry of Communications and Works award the contract, that contract, sorry, to a local contractor. Because the local contractor can do the same. All they need to do is to employ the engineers. And once they are given the specifications of the way the road is supposed to be constructed, the local contractors can do the same. You know this thing about foreign investment and we're against foreigners. How should we allow foreigners to come in here? And the investment is that they take away the little local revenue this government has. Belfashion was not taken away. Belfashion was given to the economy. Why don't you understand? Minister of the Minister of Health from General South, you don't understand this. That is basic. That is very basic. Belfashion was injecting finances into our economy. The road construction companies are taking away money from our economy. And the money has not been burnt in St. Lucia. So, Mr. Speaker, that is what I've been explaining all the time. But it seems like the member from Denry South is not understanding. And he says he wants to run Denry North. Your understanding is too low and too poor. So, Mr. Speaker, agricultural roads. Lapel, deplorable situation. You know, I know the government is not planning to improve or to assist in the production of bananas in Christian. I know they're not planning. Because Mr. Speaker, the road is an essential factor for good quality and production. Lapel Road, bad. Montpanache Den Rivière. You could hardly drive up that road. The road near Rehai going up the hill, Mr. Speaker, in Gun Rivière. Bad. I don't like the name, so that's why they call it. Yeah. They call it Montpanache, I guess. The Bonnet Road, Mr. Speaker, and the Palm Road, bad. Kilarissus Road, bad, Mr. Speaker. Tea Garden Road, Mr. Speaker, bad. The River Montesi Road, bad. Belmont Austin Road, bad. Bokope Road, Mr. Speaker, the Denner Farm Road, the Destin Community Road by the school. Just now the teachers would not be able to drive down the Minister of Education. Listen to that one, Minister of Education. You have built a school, and I've always talked about it. You have built a school, but just now there wouldn't be any road access to that school. Mr. Speaker, and you know the place that is most active in the constituency. Oleo, Mr. Speaker. Oleo has a population of over 6,000 persons and the road is in shape. Mr. Speaker, I spoke about it. Yes. Oleo, the voting list shows that Oleo has about 4,000 persons on the vote. No, on the voting list. Listen. The voting list is 18 and above. But listen to that. The voting list, you see, again, the member from Denry South, you don't listen. I'm trying to explain how I got up to the 6,000. And it's written at the statistical department. Only you have 6,000 persons. Or you have about 4,000 persons voting on the voters list, 4,000 and more. And so it's about 6,000 persons. Only you, Mr. Speaker. The road is very bad at Oleo. Very, very, very bad. And I urge, Mr. Speaker, that the road be constructed. That the road be constructed. The Oleo Farm Road too is very bad. And so, Mr. Speaker, not to be biased, when you hear me talk about roads that are bad, you wonder with all the road works that are going on in the valley why I'm talking about bad roads, but these roads are bad. That is not what I'm saying. I am saying in common terms that if we set our priorities right, if we do the savings in the right area, if we do not allow all the things that are happening with excess money being wasted and spent in certain areas, then this money should be used to fix up roads across the country. That is what I'm saying, you know. That is what I'm saying easily. It's not any big time accounting or anything else. You know, because it's clear, Mr. Big. I mean, if you spend so much money on the Rochambeau deal, this money could have been used elsewhere. That is what I'm saying. That is what I'm saying. Then the Minister of Communication, which, you know, talked about the reason why... No, I'm just telling you. The Minister of Communication talked about the reason why you had the problem with the Beaufort to Soufrière Road. But with proper planning, this money will be saved, and we would use this money to build other roads. That is what I'm saying. So, Mr. Speaker, to conclude, the development committees in the general constituency play a major role in the existence of the Mabuya Valley. They serve like small local governments in each small community. They are the ones, Mr. Speaker, that put a bridge between those who like to politicize development, Mr. Speaker. They put a bridge between that. And so, I believe their existence must continue. I would like to applaud the Olio Development Committee, the Central Development Committee, the Garrett Development Committee, the Tenor Rivier Development Committee, the Belmont Development Committee, the Gun Rivier Development Committee, Mr. Speaker, and Gun Running Development Committee. I would like, Mr. Speaker, to see that the work continue. Mr. Speaker, the challenges we face are tremendous. We must now rethink our strategy. As a government, the government must rethink its strategy. We must now understand that economic prosperity can only be derived from sound economic policies that will create sustainable employment and sustainable development. Mr. Speaker, I would like to see this happen this year, because what has happened in Central Kasri has sent a very, very serious signal. I thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Well, that's my sister, that's my sister, that's my sister.